Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Blair.
Good day to all of you, and good day, Internet.
How's it going?
Excellent. How are you doing?
Good. I was off for a week, so I'm all fresh and rested and full of pineapple.
This is where I'm contractually obligated to ask you if you need a vacation from your vacation now.
That's right. Yeah. No, this time I did. I think I did it better than I have.
One vacation, vacation. Yeah.
I had some spicy shrimp. Ate some sushi and some pork tonkatsu and some doenjang jjigae. And I feel like doing some tech news.
Nice. Woo-hoo.
All right. Here we go. In 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you. Thank you for being here. Thanks to all of you, including Jeffrey Zilks, Tony Glass, and Philip Less. Coming up on DTNS, can tech learn from bats? Yes. And Blair Bazdrich from This Week in Science will tell us how. Plus, Microsoft is getting all 90s bossy again, and why generative AI is affecting software developers the most. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, March 27th, 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
From lovely Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Rich Strappolino.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us, Blair Bazdrich, co-host of This Week in Science. Welcome back, Blair.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Thank you for bringing the bats.
You got it. Anytime.
Baseball season is opening soon. We needed bats. Let's start with the quick hits, shall we? Last Friday, GitHub complied with a DMCA infringement notice from Twitter that sought to remove proprietary source code and tools that had been on GitHub for months at that point. Twitter now wants a subpoena to search for those responsible for leaking and downloading its code. The DMCA notice says someone with the handle Free Speech Enthusiast is behind the leak, and Twitter has indicated that GitHub should provide info about that account's access history as a solution to the copyright infringement case.
First Citizens BancShares has agreed to buy Silicon Valley Bank. The FDIC says that First Citizens is buying around $72 billion of SVB's assets at a discount of a mere $16.5 billion, which still leaves the FDIC in control of roughly $90 billion in securities and other assets. Keep track of all those billions. $20 billion of the purchase price will go to the deposit insurance fund, with the FDIC getting equity appreciation rights in First Citizens.
Alibaba's co-founder Jack Ma, once the face of tech in China, made some comments about China's financial regulators and was called in for a stern talking to back in 2020, after which he dropped off the radar. In fact, he spent the entire last year outside of China, mainly in Japan, though he bumped around to a few other places. So it's worth noting that he has now returned to China. In fact, visited a school in Hangzhou, where Alibaba is based. He spoke to students there about AI, saying, "We are going to use AI to solve problems instead of being controlled by AI." China has cracked down hard on tech entrepreneurs in the software and services sector since 2020, but Ma's return could indicate that that crackdown is finally easing.
Microsoft launched a public preview of its latest version of Teams. Microsoft calls this a reimagining of Teams from the ground up, featuring twice the performance while using half the memory as before. Joining meetings should now be 2 times faster. Toggling between chats should be 1.7 times faster. It's not a clean number, but it's still impressive. Mac support is due later this year as well. Microsoft also announced Teams has 280 million monthly active users, up from 270 million in January 2022.
So they're killing Slack slowly, is what I'm hearing here. Following up on the lawsuit between the Internet Archive and book publisher Hachette et al., Judge John G. Keltel ruled Friday that the archive created derivative works and did not have a fair use of them, and therefore should not have lent out copies of books digitally without permission from the publisher. If you recall from our previous conversation, the Internet Archive had departed from controlled digital lending during lockdowns in 2020 to eliminate wait lists for book borrowing. If you don't remember, controlled digital lending means only lending out one electronic copy for every physical copy that the library holds. The Internet Archive says it will repeat. Appeal the ruling. Let's talk licenses.
Ooh, it's one of my favorite things to talk about. That and Microsoft, this really joins my two favorite. Microsoft licenses its Bing search index to other providers on top of obviously operating Bing itself. Companies like DuckDuckGo, Yahoo, Neva, and You.com all are licensees. And Bing has become a lot more interesting to people since it integrated OpenAI into a chat sidebar. Lots of people are trying it again or giving it a try for the first time. Lots of other search engines have been racing to add similar functionality, which means they need to train their chatbots on a search index. Maybe you see where I'm going here. If you're Google, of course, you just use your own. But if you're You.com or DuckDuckGo, well, you're getting a search index from Bing. So, just checked. Bloomberg sources say Microsoft informed at least two customers that it will terminate their license to use the Bing search index if they use it to train AI tools. Hey, what happened to the kindler, gentler Microsoft under, kind Uncle Satya? Does that only apply when Microsoft isn't winning, Tom?
It does look that way of like, oh, if we're the most popular chatbot in town, we want to protect it. I also think there might be some liability issues here. If you train off the Bing index, there is a certain bias to any index you train off of that Microsoft knows best how to adapt. So it's possible that they are saying, hey, don't train off our index unless you talk to us first. That way we can give you guidance on how to adapt to, you know, the skew that's in our particular index, because every training set has one. But, you know, Blair, I know you probably don't follow this super closely, but have you played with any of these chatbots yet?
A little bit. Isn't the Bing chatbot the one that declared love for somebody and asked them to leave their wife?
They all have done something similar to in Bing's defense. Yeah. Like as right. soon as these things Fair come enough. Out, somebody tries to figure out how to make it do something silly sounding and succeeds, because you can make them do lots of stuff. But yes, I think you're right. Bing is the one that did that.
Yeah. And isn't DuckDuckGo's whole thing that they don't track your data? So they would have to use Microsoft's data to be able to even use an AI chatbot.
Right. That's an interesting question. If they're getting the search index, they wouldn't have any personal data, but could the fact that Microsoft has personal data somehow, you know, work its way into the search index? A search index is public, and if DuckDuckGo is using the search index to feed their search results, then I guess training off it isn't any different than serving up the search results. But yeah.
I'm going to do something that goes against my former Linux hippie heart, and I'm going to defend Microsoft because
this is going to hurt. Go for it. Okay,
well, here's the everything that we've talked about with the kindler, gentler Microsoft is that they're not forcing everybody to like buy a Windows license, right? They're like they're happy to like sell you stuff other like in almost every other situation, right? But it's not like they're giving anything away. Sure, they contribute more to open source. Great, congratulations, guys. But it's like they still are like just a massively popular services company now, as opposed to a massively popular OS company. So like when I see that they're saying, hey, you can't use the search index, it's because you signed up to use the search index so that you can pay us amount of money so that you can make money serving ads to people, making a search engine, right? Like fundamentally a chatbot is a different product, right? So I don't think this is Microsoft saying you can't use the Bing search index for training chatbots. It's you have to pay us a license to use it for that purpose versus operating a search engine. I honestly think that's a perfectly reasonable like business decision in that this is an asset.
If I'm paying for access to an index, why shouldn't I be able to do whatever I want with it?
Because if you see subsection 3 of clause 32, it
because
says
you told
this
me not to is the only yeah, yes, yeah, is the reason.
Yes,
yeah.
Like I mean, now if they are wholesale just saying like we're changing the terms of it, and it, I don't know how often these license agreements renew or anything like that, maybe that feels a little bit more, hey, all of a sudden we have a lead in something as opposed to being an afterthought in the search engine market, and so we're going to put our foot on your throat or something like that. But this just feels more like we want to create a service offering so that we can appropriately profit off of this new hot category versus just like pure, we're cutting out everybody else.
I think it's probably a combo, right? There's probably liability issues and guidance issues that are legitimate that they want to use. I also think that they will charge you for offering those guidance. And why wouldn't they? I don't know.
Or even just optics, like Microsoft has, even with all the headlines of a chatbot says it loves somebody or left and made me leave my wife or something like that. You know, all of the National Enquirer headlines that come out of this, like Microsoft at some point is a big enough organization that they knew they were kind of going into this road. So even if it's not like purely liability, like someone's going to sue us, I think they do want to be in control of the optics of this for a while, so that a company, you know, that DuckDuckGo or Neva, not that they're not unprepared for this kind of thing, but they're not prepared for it on Microsoft's terms. So even if it's just optics, not even we're worried about X amount of financial obligation as a result of that, I totally buy that.
Well, one of the things you can use generative AI for with abandon is creating software. It's apparently really good at coding. Scott Rosenberg at Axios has an article called AI Changes the Software Making Game, and he notes that software developers seem to be feeling the biggest effect of generative AI. He's quoting a couple of venture investors in this article, Paul Kodrowski and Eric Norlin, who wrote, "Such technologies are terrific to the point of dark magic at producing, debugging, and accelerating software production quickly and almost costlessly. ChatGPT can write code based on human language instructions from non-programmers and explain how that code works." So you can just say, like, write me a script that will show a block bouncing back and forth between two paddles. And it can do stuff like that. The code still might need debugging. It isn't always bug-free, but it's pretty good. And in fact, you could get ChatGPT to debug its own code. Humans are still going to be needed, though, to check the machine's work, to develop new kinds of programming systems. But Rosenberg wrote, there may be much less demand for the routine labor of taking existing software systems and wiring them up to work together. That's a lot of what developers do today. We've talked about no code in the past, meaning like, oh, you can create programs without having to know how to code, but those have been fairly limited. This feels closer to limitless. So Blair, if we said you can just create your own apps, use ChatGPT, just tell it, describe what kind of software you want, could you use that in your job?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in my day-to-day job, I don't know, but in just for fun and like my animal research loving birding world. Absolutely. The thing that comes to mind immediately is I saw this animal. I can describe it verbally. What was it? So it was a bird. It had a long neck. It had a curly, pointy beak. It was like reddish, brownish, and black and white. Oh, that was an avocet. Okay, that's what you saw, right? So I would absolutely love to have that because, you know, there's things like Seek, but you have to get so close and take a photo, and even then, it's not that accurate. So it would be great. They could do that. Of course, the thing that I worry about, though, is the big AI question, which is truthfulness. So if it wasn't sure, would it make up an answer, right? And I guess that would be down to the code.
I guess what I would say is, if I were in that situation, I would tell ChatGPT, write me a program that can draw on a database to match my descriptions with actual birds. And then you provide the database like that, you know, and that way you're not asking ChatGPT to identify the birds at that point. You're saying, you know, use this reliable information.
Right. Yeah. Here's a wildlife guide for use that.
Yeah. And then if it's going to hallucinate, it'll just have broken code and then you won't have an app, but at least it won't be giving you that's the best case scenario. But it's interesting with all ChatGPT plug-in talk that I noticed Zapier was one of the companies that they were testing with. And that this seems to me like, I don't know, like a Zapier killer, to be quite honest. I mean, I'm sure that's why they're on top of it, right? Because they see this as the next evolution of their service as well. But there are so many services like that where it's like, I know that there are APIs that can do specific functions and that I would like those to tie into other services. I don't know how to code, so I really can't do that. But if I know that an API is the capability to do this, all of a sudden I'm not reliant on Ift or Zapier or something like that, or as reliable to do that. I could imagine Zapier actually training ChatGPT or a chatbot specifically to like kind of answer queries of like, whenever I get this email, I want you to save it to this place, or I want you to perform this action on it in a way that is real language. I mean, a lot of those services, Ift does a better job of giving you this extremely narrowed down sandbox of functions that'll, you know, kind of all plug in and talk to each other. Zapier can get a little more of a hairy sometimes, depending on how deep in the weeds you get into that. But if you can have something that's just like pure text put over that, Tom, you mentioned about no code. I mean, that to me feels much more functional than here is this, you know, stripped down baby version of a coding interface that'll let you do like these four things. And we kind of have mapped out all the possible things that it can do. And yeah, you can create some like very specific business functions or something like that. We've seen Salesforce and Google buy up companies in the past couple of years to that effect, because there is a business use case for that. But this, to me, feels so much more expansive and useful from a non-coder. But we've also seen studies from GitHub and from others that this kind of stuff like makes real world differences for people that are in the weeds, for developers, for sure.
Yeah, Warsinger in our own Discord wrote a couple of days ago, I learned that ChatGPT is pretty good at writing shell scripts, way better than I am, even having to Google everything. If that's part of your job or life, give it a try. It's also good at modifying them with new requirements or when it doesn't get things quite right. It's less good, but still better than me at the AWS CLI commands, but probably saved me about 50% of the work and created a more robust solution than I would have come up with without a lot more work. What I took away from this is you're still going to need to know a little bit about programming, about what's possible and what's not possible to make this effective. But for a developer, they do. So this is going to be incredibly helpful. For someone who is unfamiliar with coding, they may still need help. They may still need some instructions on how to write those prompts. Probably need someone to double check the code before you implement it, just to make sure there's no bugs in there. But it's certainly going to speed stuff up, right?
Yeah, it seems like, and make like quality of life improvements. Like, you know, there's with every job, developers included, there's a lot of drudgery in these kind of stuffs, and there's a reason, right? Like Microsoft launched a lot of their AI initiatives with GitHub's Copilot, because they very clearly saw something, one, that it would be good at, and two, has a business use case. Obviously, they can also sell a service based on that. No surprise there. But like, you know, we were seeing reports from GitHub that, you know, it allowed developers, like 73% of developers in a survey, they said, help them to kind of stay in their flow state, you know, when they're working on their having Copilot to just, okay, it's going to auto-suggest stuff.
Yeah,
I'm not having to go to Stack Overflow and look up something for a half hour or something like that. And really helped them also, 87% helped with repetitive tasks as well. Again, like just taking out of that drudgery and hopefully opening the door to, you know, more creative stuff as well.
Developer tested, developer approved. ChatGPT, go check it out. But if only, Rich, if only for those of us who are still like, wait, but what is ChatGPT actually? Like, what does it do? If only there were like five simple ways to explain that.
Well, then you should check out Tom's new show, Tom's Top 5. This is where Tom, you may know him, will break down the top five things you need to know about technology. Everything from AI, ChatGPT, to online services, security, even tech legislation. There will be five things. You can watch it at youtube.com/DailyTechNewsShow.
Bats use echolocation to quote unquote see objects in areas with low or no light, you know, like bat caves. They send ultrasonic pulses from their mouths and nose and receive the echoes with their ears to create a 3D map of their space. It's like a map made of tiny screams. It sounds fun, right? Well, bioengineers from Hiroshima University in Japan have studied the movements of bat ears to determine how they receive echolocation signals and then create a mathematical model that could amplify direction detection and replicate the bat's abilities in human technology, thus making us all bat people. Blair, what did they learn?
Well, it's not surprising. It's that the kind of the angle and vector that the ears are pointing in help hone in on locations of sounds and locations of things in the distance, be it a wall, another bat, or some prey. And they found that when they were opposed, it did the best job when they were kind of pointing in opposite directions. And that you can actually apply that information and the model that they created into potentially creating sonar systems artificially. And so, of course, that could be used in drones, in all sorts of kind of actual helpful technology, but also you could potentially a real Batman cowl with ears that moved that you could actually use sonar in, which would be pretty cool.
So we're talking, they were able to reverse engineer this system then.
Yes. So basically they looked at bats. They noticed the way that they work. Sometimes bats have this kind of constant frequency that doesn't change. Sometimes they modulate their frequency as they get closer or farther away. They might change how high or low the screeching is. And with that, in tandem, they have this ear movement that's helping them completely match their space. And before we go any further, I will debunk the myth that bats are blind. They are not blind. They can see, but the hearing and the sonar system really, really helps in that it is still pretty dark where they live. And so even though they see, they might not be able to see well. So with all that in mind, they can kind of map their surroundings and track moving targets with the movements of their ears. And just like with binocular vision, like mm-hmm. how we see our two eyes in the front of our face, we can hone in on something really close. With animals with monocular vision, that's like a chameleon or a rabbit with eyes on the sides, you can get a 360 view of your space. And so they can actually use their ears to do both. They can hone in on a thing in front of them, or they can turn their ears sideways and map their space in terms of the soundscape to see where they are in space.
Eyes in the back of their head.
Exactly. Yes. Right.
Except with ears. This like we do this in a very clunky way, right? If you're trying to listen or hear something, you cock your head or you turn to hear. It just sounds like they have a lot more control and a lot more precision than we have.
Yes, absolutely. And when I used to do overnight tours at the zoo, I would have kids in the dark stand by a fountain, and then I'd have them cup their ears in one direction and then the other, and they could actually pinpoint where the water was coming from based on kind of the cupping of their ears, so they could hone in on the location. And that's exactly what the ear flap, the structural ear on the bat is doing. But so they took kind of this observation, put it into a mathematical model so that they could manipulate it on three axes, on the X, the Y, and the Z axis, to figure out exactly how to move these ears to best map a space. So that's something that they can now apply to other technology.
Now, I do want ears on my smartphone. You mentioned us having bat cowls.
Yes.
Obviously, those will be things that happen, of course. What else?
Oh, that's the next step for sure.
What else would they be able to do with this?
So they just basically, the next step, it's still baby steps. So this study was just creating the mathematical model. Mm-hmm, okay. Their next step is to create a practical sensing system with pseudo moving ears so that it creates a simple sonar for 3D navigation. This could go on drones. This could go, on a remote control cockroach. That's like always where my brain goes.
Yeah. Remote control cockroach is a good one.
That is part of it. But I also think this is something that you can apply to other animals. There are lots of animals that use sound data, the way that they behave. And so you could actually track visually through like high speed cameras. You could see how other animals, rabbits, for example, how they move their ears to see what they're thinking, where they're listening. There's a lot of things you could do with this model.
There's a use of Wi-Fi to map and detect motion in a space. This could potentially improve that. Too, I yes. guess.
Yeah. It's just basically another data point. We use five senses to get around our space. And this is just another way that we can do that artificially. It's another sense. It's another tool.
Yeah. So those cute fuzzy ear attachments for your phone will soon be very useful.
Yes, there you go.
Maybe not soon, but someday.
Well, something that might also be useful in the future is a Dyson sphere. Now, that may sound like a fancy, if overly expensive, vacuum, but it's actually a concept outlined in the 1960s by physicist Freeman Dyson, who imagined that an advanced civilization could eventually enclose its home star to capture as much solar energy as possible. Make a big sphere around a star. Sounds good in theory, but how long would it take a galactic civilization to kind of break even from the energy cost of building such a massive sphere? Well, theoretical cosmologist Paul Sutter wrote a piece for Ars Technica, and he did the back of the envelope map for us. So put away your calculators. He's done some of the hard work here. If we convert all of the Earth into a series of flat panels to better collect solar radiation. In this scenario, I believe they were 1 kilometer thick, assuming a 10% efficiency in collection, like we all do, it would take about 60,000 years to recoup the energy investment. Of course, if we move the Earth's orbit closer to the sun, that could cut it down to a mere 10,000 years. I don't know what that would do to the ecology of life, but I mean, 50,000 years, we could figure it out, right? So it might require some long-term planning and maybe a place to stay while it's being
built. Yeah, just a place for humanity to live for a good 10 to 60,000 years, but worth it.
Well, and my favorite part about this is Sutter also didn't just look at Earth. He was like, well, if we use Mercury, it's a smaller mass, but it's way closer to the sun. And then he was like, and Jupiter, way further away. Totally not.
Hold on. Mercury, Venus. Why don't we convert Venus into the flat panels? It's a closer already.
True. Although I don't think it's not. Well, no, it's the sister planet to Earth. It's almost the same size.
Yeah.
There we go.
And we just need to get a little better, more efficient in the collection of the radiation.
So let's start a change.org petition right now. Build the Dyson sphere out of Venus.
And he's just building the panels with this. He's using all of Earth to build the panels. That's just for power.
And really, it's not a Dyson sphere. It's like a Dyson collect 0.004%.
We're going to need to take Mars to make the surface of it if we don't want to use Earth for any of this. So it's getting complicated.
For the whole sphere, we'd have to bring in other planetary systems, deconstruct them in like an Independence Day situation, and then move them over to here to build our giant sphere.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Give me 60,000 years. You never know what's going to happen.
I appreciated that this one was a lattice structure as opposed to in sci-fi, you usually see it's kind of an enclosed case, it's kind of... It's not practical for so many reasons, and it also cuts off the entire rest of the solar system from the energy source. Not great.
If we use Venus, we can collect everything and then just a big wire to bring the power into Earth.
Right. And then, you know, who knows what the loss of the mass of Venus where it's supposed to be will then do to the solar system.
Okay, so we'll
what
need to
I'm hearing
that.
Is details. Okay. We need to think
work
big
the
picture.
Problem, people.
Yeah. We need to make this fit into the orbit for this using nothing.
All right. Let's check out the mailbag. In response to our discussion about Framework's new expansion-based system for their modular laptops, Damon wrote in to add, I believe this is perfect for the education sector. Students that are interested in computer science could be issued a device like this in their freshman year of high school, and they could keep it and easily upgrade it until they graduate. After the student graduates, they would be given the device. This computer could follow them to college and beyond. This would get a generation used to a modular design and build a customer base for life. So Damon's like, steal a page from Google Chromebook for Framework, and you actually have a more sustainable solution because they're not going to throw it away.
Well, and I like as a student chooses to, hey, I wanted to go after graphic design or I want to go after this. Like, I can slap on that GPU or slap in more storage or upgrade my CPU. I think that's, I'm sure Framework would love to get in there too.
Yeah. Framework's like, please tell us who to call at the biggest
schools. We would love this big contract with your school district, please.
For sure.
A really good point in the chat. Do you know how beat up textbooks get? Are you going to make them cover it in a paper bag cover?
Well, have laptops now. They have Chromebooks now. So you just got to,
And if the outside gets beat up, the internal components are fine. So you could just buy a new Framework enclosure and transfer all the components over. Less waste.
Plus, if you're worried about them losing it, you just put a couple bat ears on it and you're good to go.
There you go. You
can always find it.
Well, thank you so much, Blair Basrich, for filling us in on all of the fabulous bat tech that's in our near future. I absolutely love it. I'm just thinking of weird simulated ears while I was researching for today's show. It was very bizarre. Where can people find more of your great stuff if they're so inclined?
Go to twist.org. That's TWIS, as in This Week in Science. We broadcast weekly at 8 p.m. Pacific time on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, all the places. Just go to twist.org. You'll find out all about it. And we are also, of course, available as a podcast on Stitcher, Spreaker, the podcast app, all of the places podcasts exist. We're there. And you can also support us on patreon.com/thisweekinscience.
Do all of those things, everybody. And speaking of Patreon, you can support us as well. In fact, thanks to our brand new boss, Colin, just started backing us on Patreon. Welcome, Colin. All the other patrons, give Colin a big warm DTNS welcome. Help him out in the Discord. Help him out on the Patreon comments. And Colin, you get to stick around for the extended show now.
Yeah, Good Day Internet's going to be happening right after our stream here. And we'll be talking about the viral fame of Swag Pope and how we're reacting to plausible AI-generated imagery.
Oh, you don't want to miss that. You can also catch us live if that's your preferred way, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Back tomorrow, talking about AI book narration with Erin Carson. She wrote that up for CNET. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
That was an excellent show. Thank you, Blair.
Thanks
as
so much.
Always.
Fun as always.
Indeed. Yeah. Two things. One, if you're watching or listening live, you can submit titles in the Discord or the Twitch chat using the bang S command, and they will show up on showbot.tv/DTNS and showbot.tv/DTNS2 for the GDI and the DTNS titles. So get over there and vote at Showbot on what titles we should use. Second thing is, I could never get Zazzle to actually take my login, and so I didn't get the calendar this year, Blair. I feel horrible that I don't have the calendar, but I usually have the calendar behind me.
I have a couple hard copies. If you send me your address, I will. Oh, really? I know it's late, but
I don't know what the deal was with Zazzle. It would just like not take my login.
Well, the other problem is they pulled it because I guess
really?
I don't know. It was a weird thing where there's other things on there that has Legos on it, but for some reason it somehow infringed. I don't know. I didn't even write Lego in the title. I think
that's weird. Also, because
or something,
the Lego design is out of protection, like out of patent protection, maybe not out of copyright protection, but like you can make knockoff Legos legally now that interoperate.
So. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah. Very strange. Like there's no way for them to be able to prove I used Lego brand Legos in any of the things.
Yeah. Those were all but with the other one. I can't remember the name now.
Mega Blocks.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. That's it. Yeah.
There's like three Mega Blocks. My kid has all of them for some reason. I think it's because the family members. Well, the family members wanted Legos but didn't want to pay the Lego fee.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and also Mega Blocks has certain licenses that that Lego doesn't. Like, I think Lego still doesn't do anything rated R.
Oh, Halo. They have Halo.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's different IP licenses.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Lego scored on Star Wars, Harry Potter, and Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And also,
if you pay for
pirates.
Lego Plus, you can get expanded access to their
No. Yeah. So this is the weirdest thing. I know this is taking away from the question, but real quick, I noticed they have a Friends one. Like it's a Lego set that's the Friends set.
Yes,
has the
I do not like
it.
Those shapes. the minifigures of Lego Friends, they creep me out.
They have Friends, and there's like two other TV series that they put in there, and I thought, wow, I guess. These Legos are now set for people who are in their 40s.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. That's not.
There's a Seinfeld set, I think.
It's weird. People with Seinfeld. Disposable income, they would make something.
No,
for.
I think the Lego the Lego custom sets are for adults.
100%. The Friends were
those price tank points exactly. Yeah.
No, there's a whole like you know, Roger, you've seen the Lego people. We have some mutual friends who are Lego people. I think Lego has definitely accepted that and leans into it.
I mean, their stuff has got. I know everything has gotten pricier, but like they have an X-wing set, which is not even like a master grade set, and it's like $150. And I remember I bought one for like $40, and it's the same thing.
They just came out with a BTS Dynamite Lego set based on the Dynamite music video.
Sure.
Thankfully.
Open up your wallets, folks.
Yep.
The Friends one is a scene from Central Perk, the coffee shop that they're always sitting at. And I actually bought it for my daughter for her birthday 2 years ago.
Oh, nice.
Aww.
Did she build it?
We were supposed to build it together, but then she moved out. And it's like one of those things we need to just find a day to sit down and do it together.
My sister-in-law and her husband, they do the sets. They've got a room filled with them. I don't know if they do the gluing. Some people actually glue the sets together. I don't think they do that. They're
That's
not
a
like
sin.
That intense.
It's a sin.
Yeah.
It's a sin.
No, it's a religious argument. Some people, like Roger, think it's a sin. Other people
sin.
Do not. Speaking of sins, though, if you want to get your sin absolved, you need the puffy Pope. You need Swaggy P. Until yesterday, if I said the word Swaggy P, you probably would think I was talking about former NBA player Nick Young. But after an image of the pontiff wearing a white puffer jacket made the rounds on social media, we now know that's a reference to Swag Pope. The only problem is Swag Pope is not real, unlike the real Pope, who is a real person. The image was created in Midjourney. It wasn't meant to fool people. It just was created in Midjourney. It first appeared on the Midjourney subreddit on March 24th. It's like, hey, look what I made Midjourney do. I told it to draw the Pope in a puffer jacket, and it did. Isn't that cool? It looks really realistic. There are some smearing and odd details if you look at it closely, but it passes the scan test. I'm curious, were any of you, like Chrissy Teigen was, so you're not alone, fooled when you first saw Swag Pope?
I was fooled in that I just scrolled by it in my Mastodon feed, and I just assumed it was real, but I was like, I don't want to click through the article to read about Swag Pope. But I was like, I accepted Swag Pope into my life. And into my heart, to be quite honest.
I will say, if you look at it like on a bigger screen, it's less convincing than if you.
Yeah, because you start to see those little details and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Well, and the light.
Tell me what's wrong with it. I can't tell. Look at well, like, what was he holding?
What is he holding?
His fingers holding the coffee cup. The fingers don't really hold the cup. The cup doesn't have an opening. It kind of looks half like
a coffee cup.
Well, okay. I'm calling it a coffee cup because I think it's half a Schlitz can, half a Starbucks coffee cup.
Like, yeah.
I kind of assumed it was just a Catholic thing I didn't know about.
Yeah, that's fair. No.
It's a travel chalice. Yeah.
Some holy water.
There's
there.
Also the possibility that it's the entire coffee pot with only like. It's got there's a really odd shadow that makes it might be bigger.
I mean, the bigger thing is the fingers. Like, if you're again at a distance, you may not notice it. The fingers aren't bad, but once you look closely, they aren't fingers. They're
also
just like knobs.
The fingers on the right image. I mean, unless the Pope, and I've seen his hands because, you know, from previous images, but like suddenly got swelling in his hands, and they were like the size of a Polish sausage. I don't think that would.
That's not for John Paul
II. I mean, at
least
it's the right number of fingers. Yeah. I'm used to all of the Midjourney photos having just too many or too few fingers.
Yeah,
that new V5.
New V5 is better. Better really at fingers. Good. Yeah.
Also, the puffy jacket is it looks differently in both images, right? Like if you look at the jacket itself. What? It's
the sure, two but a lot of times people were just seeing one of these images, not both. So
yeah.
I could see where
even
that
if you're
goes.
Seeing both, you're not going to see these minor details on a quick Twitter scroll.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like on a smaller screen, I can easily people could easily.
People are like, see, this just shows that you can be fooled by AI images. And it's like, yes. However, what were the stakes of you getting this wrong? Right. Like this wasn't like, we've proved, you know, this war was caused by this and everyone's paying close attention. This was like, oh, that's funny. The Pope wore a puffy jacket. And as The Verge pointed out, there have been other real images where like the Pope signed a Lamborghini and the Pope was holding a microphone like an MC like those. So it wasn't totally impossible that he could have put on a jacket like this. Right.
So back in
Tom, are you saying that I should actually like research the things that I see on the internet?
No, I'm saying this fooled people because you're like, I don't know. Pope might do this, sure. and there's no downside to believing it, right? You did not undermine anything.
So
this does not change your belief in transubstantiation,
right? Creed still stands.
Back in the early 20th century, there was the whole Cottingley fairies, where there were these supposed photographs of fairies dancing around girls' heads, and a lot of people believed it because they wanted to believe it. I think.
And I think that was even like a stronger motivation to believe than this. This, like you said, Rich, people are just flowing through their Mastodon feeds or Twitter feeds or whatever. They're not going to spend time wondering. They'll just be like, oh, that's kind of funny.
And I will say, for those of you who have not kept up on your popes and I don't blame you if that's not your thing, and not to get into the politics of liberation theology, but I would say Pope Francis is maybe known as being the cool Pope. So, like, cool Pope might wear a cool jacket.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying.
It's not entirely out of character. Yeah.
Yeah. He's from South America, so he's like probably gets cold. Like, I mean, you never know. So he might want to stay warm. That's all I'm saying. The dots lined up.
He's from South America, so he probably gets cold.
I mean, it gets cold in South America, too.
Yeah, right? I mean,
he's from a warm part of Argentina.
He's from a warm part of South America. Yeah, yes, yeah. I realize I made a climate generalization. I apologize.
I was just like, wait, he's
Argentina from North South America, which is very warm. Yeah, which is
it's not all tropical.
As opposed to North America, yes. I will also say that what I would love to happen now that Swag Pope has gone viral and does not exist, if this then becomes reality and the Pope does don a white puffer jacket
to
then retcon this into reality.
Yeah. Maybe he'll have starter robes. So it'll be a combination starter jacket and his clergy robes all in one.
Well, we are actually what we should have all realized. And well, no, he's the Pope. He's allowed to wear white. I was going to say you don't wear white during Lent.
The
Pope wears white.
He is
all
the Pope.
Year round.
Pope's allowed to wear white all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know what? The puffy jacket would help because you could insert Kevlar into it so it'd be added protection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pope coat, yeah.
So no more Pope Mobile, which again, mm-hmm. Pope Mobile first showed up. I thought that was a joke until I saw the real picture of it. So
yeah.
Puffy swag Pope.
Wait till someone does him sliding down a fireman's pole to drop straight into the Pope Mobile like Batman. And then they zoom out of the cave, Vatican cave.
I think people will be less likely to be fooled by that one.
Possibly.
Chrissy Teigen might pause at that and go, wait a minute. I got fooled by the puffer jacket. Is that one real? I don't think that one's real.
To the Pope Mobile.
Yeah. I do. This is fun. This is a fun thing. I've even seen some actual priests tweeting these pictures. I don't think any harm is here. Do you? Like, is this is not the example of how it will undermine. In fact, this is the kind of thing I think teaches us how to pay attention without having harmful effects.
I feel like we're pretty close to there needing to be some sort of watermark on AI photos. If it gets better and better and better, at a certain point, there's going to have to be some way to delineate these things as not real photographs.
I agree. I think it's the opposite, though. I think you need the mark on the real photographs to prove they are unaltered.
But then the AI will learn how to fake those marks. There was a Getty Images thing that Midjourney, I think, created that had a messed up Getty Images watermark on it.
Yeah.
Not a watermark. It would be a hash or something like that.
I was going to say, Adobe has a system already that you can opt into as a creator to say, like, I will allow you to see that I made this with this program on this date. And it's cryptographically sound, so it'd be very hard for a generative AI to fake that.
I mean,
right now.
There is
quantum AI will change that.
Yeah. There is that one website that will strip the existing watermarks off images, and it works pretty well, surprisingly well.
So moving back to those cameras that we had in the 90s that had the date on the pictures when you got them developed.
Wait,
right?
Move back. I still have one.
I have one as well.
That's a plug-in you can add, by the way.
Yeah, I think AI will be able to do that one pretty easily.
I just use Photoshop and just. But then I use a funky type.
Actually, like the whole Adobe cryptographic hash of images, I feel like that, like this, then we'll open up this whole new conversation of legitimacy of images is now put behind a paywall. Like that'll be the headline on like an op-ed where it's like that's spreading a viral. Oh, I saw this celebrity doing this.
And then
crazy
there's the open source
picture.
Implementation alternative that is created in response. And
Yeah. I do wonder how long it will be until whatever social network has the content warning. There seems like a high likelihood that this is a manipulated, you know, an AI generated image or something like that. I wonder if whoever will be the first one to dip their toe into those waters.
I would have bet on Twitter until late last year.
Yeah. They were big into the content warnings for a while. Yeah. I will say.
Yeah. But there's visual watermarks and there's non-visual watermarks. And the non-visual watermarks, if the AI is just looking at the file itself, at the appearance of it, wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that. And I think that'd be a really good way to go. But that gets really expensive if you want to start getting into cryptography and things like that. And it doesn't have to be expensive. It does not. But it does have to be implemented properly and universally. Right.
And that's where securely and all of that.
You need it portable. You need it to be embedded within the file itself, discoverable with only that file, so that if you have a single file and you don't have anything to link it to or you're not on the internet, you can still verify if it's real or not.
If we get to the point where this really is becoming a problem, then Adobe should lead a FIDO Alliance style project to say, let's create a standard for cryptographically stamping things as not generated by artificial intelligence.
And you'd want it to be for all digital goods. You want it to be for video, audio, pictures,
anything like that. And again, I do think if it's a hash that's cryptographically sound, that's really difficult for a long time. That will be difficult for generative AI to fake. And it also, if it's open, is saying like, just don't trust an image unless it's got the verified thing on it. Yeah. And we get used to that. We're used to that with Photoshop. We don't look to see if things are Photoshopped anymore. We just sort of go like, that's probably Photoshopped. Sometimes we don't believe real images because we think they're Photoshopped. So I feel like that's where humans end up, is we end up trusting things less, not trusting things too much.
We had two generations of Vogue magazine covers that were digitally altered before people actually had a conscious thought about it. So
people thought it was a problem. I don't think they were being fooled. Everybody knew they were Photoshopped. It was a couple of generations before it became like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be okay with that.
That stuff's been around since the 80s.
But that's a different, I feel like that's a different situation than like we're trying to fool people into thinking something happened, right? Which is that's where a lot of people go, is like there'll be a photo of someone getting shot, and then people will get up in arms and protest, and then you'll find out that wasn't true, but by then it will get out of hand, and
lies fly faster than truths.
They do, but Photoshop was supposed to do all of that too, and it never did. I think lies fly faster than truths, but human skepticism grows very fast as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Distrust all the
human distrust even more than skepticism. Yeah,
zero trust, not just for security anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not a great thing either. We have a trust deficit in society.
There's actually a conversation in the security community that zero trust is actually like the phrase of that has caused more harm, not more harm, is detrimental long term to a lot of security methodologies.
Right.
So, it's interesting.
Well, because the idea is that if it's zero trust, then you get comfortable with what your close to zero number is, right?
Yeah.
And if you're a particular target, you need a lower number than a general person in the general public. But some people take it to, zero trust means never trust anything ever.
Never trust anyone. Yeah. You're alone.
Yeah, yeah. I was speaking of zero trust and my zero trust in hotel Wi-Fi. When I was traveling last week, I used VPN, as I always do on the hotel Wi-Fi, and forgot it was on for the first time. Like, I never ran into that thing where I was like, oh, right, my VPN is on. Well, do I want to turn it off to get this video? I didn't have that. I streamed a live concert for 3 hours over VPN.
Wow.
On hotel Wi-Fi?
On hotel Wi-Fi in Hawaii.
I'm more surprised. Yeah. I'm more surprised about the hotel Wi-Fi holding up than I am anything else.
Usually the hotel Wi-Fi is bad enough. And then you put VPN on top of it and it's like, now I'm limited.
You're like, I can barely get email.
Yeah. No, it was great. Yeah. And I was on.
Was it only in 1080?
It might have been. Yeah. I don't think it was 4K.
He was watching it in 360p.
Yeah, wasn't watching it in VR. Come on.
I was at TechnoMench. I was using ExpressVPN. That is my travel VPN of choice.
And RealPlayer, apparently.
Okay. Was it Thumbnail Size Video? No, it was we were actually sending it to the TV in the hotel. We plugged HDMI into the TV. And
shout out to Hawaiian hotel Wi-Fi.
Right? Also, what hotels still have accessible HDMI? Because that's becoming more and more.
Oh, it was not accessible. Trust me.
Yeah, like
we took it on the wall.
I still have some cuts on my hand.
Yep. I love it when you get into a hotel and you go to like plug anything into the TV and you notice it's the last people left the HDMI cable because it's just so hard to pull out.
To get it back out. Yeah.
Yes. That is such
and it was
a
like
win.
A monster cable. So that was like $80.
These were LG TVs with one HDMI port. I'm like, do they even make that? That must be custom for hotels.
That's the hotel edition. It's like the BlackBerry that would come with no camera for government.
Yeah.
This is the LG. For stodgy hotel.
Yeah. That's and sometimes you get into the hotel and you're like, okay, the Wi-Fi kind of sucks. Maybe I'll just go in wired and I'll just wire in. And then you find out that like their wired router isn't even turned on. Hasn't
been
for years.
I haven't seen a wired router in a hotel that worked in I don't know, 10 years. Maybe more.
Most of the hotels that I stay in are up in Fairbanks because usually during soccer trips when I'm driving up there or whatever. And all of those hotels up there in Fairbanks have the wired connections and none of them work. I can attest to it. None of them actually connect to anything. Is the wire to make you feel important?
Yeah, technology. Maybe I'm not using cutting edge technology enough because technology really worked on my trip. Hmm. I had that good Wi-Fi experience. Navigation worked everywhere I went. I was up near Diamond Head once at elevation and lost signal, lost cell signal.
On Diamond Head?
Yeah.
Were you in the crater?
I was near the lighthouse. Outside? So I was going down the cliff face from the lighthouse to the ocean and I lost my LTE signal there.
Were you on Diamond Head or Makapu'u?
Good question. Wherever the lighthouse is.
That should be Makapu'u.
That's probably Makapu'u. You're right.
Up past Sandy Beach. Yeah, on that side, there's no signal because you're not getting anything from Molokai.
But as soon as I got back up to the road, the signal was back.
Yep.
It was just going down. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, because you're on the backside and the nearest towers are going
to
be down.
Yeah, so the towers can't see me and there's no island sending it to me. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And you're too far away from like H3 to have the signal up high. So yeah.
But the coverage, I mean,
satellite connectivity.
Driving out in like North Shore area, never lost connection. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, they have a lot of towers up on the face. Like you can't see them because Hawaii's really good at hiding them. Best place ever at hiding cell towers. But they have them up on the cliff face, just above the tree line. So pretty much anywhere you can get it. It's actually really good.
I saw a palm tree that I'm still not sure whether it was a cell tower or an actual palm tree.
Yeah, they're really good at hiding things there. Did you get to go in the lighthouse?
No, we didn't. We didn't actually get to go in.
So they do tours of the lighthouse, and we were there, and the group that had booked the tour didn't show up. So they were like, anybody else want to go see the lighthouse? And my ex-wife and I, with our two little ones, we were like, yeah. We totally want to see in the lighthouse. We got the free tour. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
It's a really beautiful view from up there, but you know, didn't let us stick around very long to watch it. So,
didn't get to stay and operate it, become a lighthouse keeper?
No. Actually, I think it was under renovation. The lighting system itself was being upgraded to go from the old 4 foot tall incandescent bulb to a more energy sustaining LED system.
Oh my God, 4 foot.
The bulb's huge.
That's a big old incandescent bulb. Yeah.
It's a big, yeah. And that's why they have like, they have the tower on the outside and then there's like an inner chamber where the light bulb is and nobody goes in there
because
it gets just extraordinarily hot.
And then the ocean boils from the heat, right?
Well, it's using geothermal energy to generate the power for the bulb, you know.
But the
volcanoes, the volcanoes were running out. That's why they had to get more. And it wasn't LED. It was
the volcanoes were running out.
Yeah, volcanoes were running out. So it is.
We need LEDs. The volcanoes running out.
We're all out of volcano. Yeah. But you put those lights on there. You get like your smart assistant turn them on at night. No one knows.
Mm-mm.
I don't know. My case for moving to Hawaii just keeps getting better and better with this.
As long as you don't go by the lighthouse, it'll be good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to block lived there from for there. Having lived there for 4 years, I can tell you all the things I didn't like about it.
Sure.
About two sentences. You will catch island fever. Of course, mm-hmm. I was there after spending 4 years on Okinawa, so I, you know, by the time I left,
pre-existing condition.
Yeah. And 4 years of island life going into it, and then went from Okinawa to Oahu, which was two-thirds of the size of Okinawa, so it was mm-hmm. a smaller island at that.
Okay.
You will get that, and there are certain areas where at certain times of day, you don't want to be the only Howley in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Howley, I think it actually means white-skinned person or light-skinned person, but they use it to mean anybody that's not an islander.
I mean, that's not that much different than other places I've lived.
Yeah.
In different ways, you know, so that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And most of those places are out on the western side of the island anyway, where there's not a whole lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Really beautiful sunsets, but other than that.
Where the really cheap houses are.
No, where the affordable houses are.
Well, yeah, I guess none of it's cheap, but yeah.
No.
Where the houses where I'm like, ooh, that's a good, oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Well, and of course, my wife grew up there. So, Tom, if you ever actually do look at buying real estate, let me know.
All right. Yeah, if we ever get serious about it, I do a lot of window shopping.
Wait, have a house in Mililani.
Mililani's where my friend lives.
2 hours after me, I think. So it's 3 hours from Pacific.
What time would we have to do a Daily Tech News show?
Well, Tom would have to do it at like 7 in the morning.
That's weird. That's a weird question because there's no daylight saving time. So right now it's 3 hours behind Pacific time, but up until daylight saving time, it was 2 hours behind. Mm-hmm. So who gets to decide when the show is, me or everyone else? In which case, then I would have to change my the time that I would do it at would change. And then, like in all seriousness, if I ever did move to that time zone, we'd have to decide like, oh, do we keep doing it at this time, which is early in the morning for that time zone? Or those are all questions to deal
with. Think of the show, Tom.
Should we ever get to that point?
I lived in Israel for 6 months during, when was that, 2012, 2013. And I had to wake up, I had to do twists. For most of the time, it was at 5 a.m. my time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
And then for about a month, because daylight savings happens later there than here, I had to do it at 4 a.m.
That's what Justin's doing now, too, right?
Yeah.
Justin Jackson, not Justin Robert Young for listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in Denmark, so he's... it's funny. I feel like he had a beer with the show for like years and years and years and years. And now he's had a cup of coffee and he's on coffee cup number two for the show. It's a very different energy.
But Wild West Dan, I am in a different place than when we started DTNS, but it is the same time zone. So. I don't know. Would it be a problem to do the show later in the day? This is not a real problem that we'll have to deal with anytime soon, if ever. But
as long as it's not around.
So he's like, yes, it would. I'm in the UK. That would be a big problem. Yeah. It's already too late.
I was going to say, do you know how many people on the Eastern Seaboard would be so angry at us if we moved it?
Yeah. The farther east you go, the bigger a problem it becomes. But Tech News Today used to be at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Which is 6 Eastern, and too late.
Much like civilians working for the government, we have established a standard, and the people will riot if we try to change it.
Yeah. We changed 3 p.m. to 10 a.m. and didn't get... We got a little bit of fluff. And then this used to be 1:30, and we went to 1. That was not too big of a change.
Tom, I want to let you know that I'm okay with you deciding right now in this moment to move to Hawaii. That's fine. You may move to Hawaii. Bye.
Trust me, if I could, I probably would.
I was the one telling you I'm going to move to Malta, so don't worry about it.
Wow, talk about a time zone difference.
That would be tough. Yeah. That'd be a tough time zone.
Island living. Everyone's picking an island.
I'm
going to
be prepping Daily Tech.
I will tell you, and anybody that's listening, if you do decide to move to Hawaii, and once you get settled in and you've got your house unpacked and you kind of know where the grocery store is and you know you've met your neighbors and mm-hmm. their family, because that will happen. Pick up geocaching. It's an amazing way to discover the island. It's how I discovered the island when I lived there.
That's a great tip.
And holy crap. GC23 is the 23rd geocache ever planted, and it's on a hiking trail in Aiea. And that trail is amazing. I used to walk it about every weekend when I was going through my divorce. So this is like my little sanctuary, my little 3-hour walk.
Very cool. Well, I want to thank everybody in the world for just being themselves. But specifically, I would like to thank our patrons at patreon.com/DTNS. They get a little special thanks for making this show possible. Again, thanks to Colin for being a new patron. Everybody make Colin welcome. Thank you to Aldwin for giving us a raise as well. Thank you, Aldwin, for upping support. And thank you, Russell, for upping support. Both you guys are awesome, as are all the patrons. We also have those folks watching us live, dedicated to showing up for appointment viewing. We appreciate you as well. Squishy Twitchy resubscribed on Twitch at Tier 1 for the 14th month. Paley Glendale gave out a community subscription gift. Paley Glendale always gives out community subscription gifts. You're so nice. And cheered us with 200 bits. Zoe and Brian cheered us with bits. And Super Average 214, you're above average to us because you're our new follower on Twitch. Thank you for doing that as well. And thank you, Blair, for being here.
Of course. Thanks. It's always fun.
It is. Please come back soon. Bring more animal tech stories. They're the best. And until tomorrow, everyone, have a good day.
Have a good day.
Have a super sparkly day.
Good day.